Calling this meeting of the Taxes Committee to order for Wednesday, April 29th, 2026. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative Elkins, would you like to move the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, I've read the minutes and moved their approval.
Excellent. So Representative Elkins has moved the minutes for April 28th, 2026. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion carries. The minutes are adopted. So first up, we have two excellent David Kozlowski bills. While the chair goes up to the table, Chair Davids is going to move that House File 4677 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Go ahead whenever you're ready, Chair.
It's 4677. Thank you for moving the bill, Madam Chair, and thank you for hearing the bill. And I'd like to thank my co-author, Kozlowski, on this bill. And I've got a witness I'd like to describe the bill, Reed LeBeau, if he could introduce himself and let us know what's in the bill.
Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, Co-Chair Davids, members of the committee. My name is Reed LeBeau. I represent the Fond du Lac Band. This bill deals with one parcel of property that's wholly within the Fond du Lac Reservation that has a warehouse that only houses our medical equipment, including a mobile cancer diagnostic unit that we have. And so for that reason, if it were any other regular nonprofit or any other type of government, there'd be no need for this bill, but because it's an Indian tribe, we need special legislation to have that parcel be property tax exempt.
Thank you, Mr. LeBeau. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on House File 4677? Not seeing any. Any member discussion? Representative Joy.
A couple clarifications. Thank you, Chair. And Mr. LeBeau, is this property located inside the boundaries of the reservation?
Mr. LeBeau?
Chair and Representative Joy, yes, it's wholly within the external boundary of the Fond du Lac Reservation.
That's what Representative Joy? Thank you very much.
Great. Is there any further discussion? All right. Chair Davids, any final comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd appreciate your support.
Excellent. With that, Chair Davids is going to renew his motion that House File 4677 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you, Chair Davids. Moving on to the next David's bill, House File 4678. Would you like to move your bill, Mr. Chair?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I will move House File 4678, and then I would also like to move the H4678A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd like.
Excellent. Is there any discussion on the motion to adopt the A1 amendment to House File 4678? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion carries. The A1 is adopted. The bill is in the form the author would like. Chair Davids, to your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. And I'd again like to thank Representative Kozlowski for being a co-author on the bill. And I will turn this one over to Mr. LeBeau right now.
Please proceed, Mr. LeBeau.
Thank you, co-chairs. Again, Reed LeBeau on behalf of the Fond du Lac Band. This bill extends a exemption that's already in law. The Fond du Lac Band operates a healthcare facility in the city of Duluth, and in previous legislatures, that the property that it sat on was put into was given property tax exempt status. The footprint has now grown. It was previously limited to just two parcels. We now have three. This would extend that to up to five, no more than five parcels. And the amendment clarifies that they don't have to be adjacent because currently we have a third parcel that there's one little piece of land in between, and it's the parking lot that we've now acquired, but it's a parking lot that only serves the healthcare facility.
Thank you, Mr. LeBeau, for that description. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on House File 4678 as amended? Not seeing any. Any member questions or discussion? Seeing none. Chair Davids, any final remarks for us?
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, members, and the other issue is on 1.18 that extends from 2028 to 2038. So I just wanted to point that out too. So no, Madam Chair, I would just renew my motion that House File 4678 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Excellent. Chair Davids has moved that the bill be laid over, and it's laid over. Thank you very much, Chair Davids. Thank you, Mr.
Madam Chair and members. Thanks, Reed.
Thank you.
All right, next on the agenda is House File 4974, Representative Lee. As Representative Lee's getting up to the podium, she's going to move that House File 4974 be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. While Rep. Lee is getting settled, she does have an author's amendment A1 that I think she's going to ask us to move.
Yes, please.
Excellent. Is there any discussion on the A1? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted, and the bill is in the form that the author would like. Representative Lee, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, chairs and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 4974 as amended, a bill which would provide increased property tax refunds to almost all of Minnesota. And we know how important this is because we've heard a lot about record high property taxes, whether it's been in committee this year or in your communities. The Department of Revenue's most recent analysis shows that cities and counties have increased their levies to around an average of 7.6 to 7.7 percentage points from last year. Local governing units have cited high inflation, operating costs, like increasing healthcare insurance for employees, and many have infrastructure needs. And this is all before taking into account the devastating impacts of HR 1. The state asks our counties to deliver a lot of services, which our communities need, like health and social services. The property tax levy is the main tool that local governing units have to raise revenues. For us at the legislature, we have two main tools to address this issue. One, on the front end, is to increase LGA and CPA, or at least tie it to inflation so that cities and counties can balance their budgets. And on the back end, we can provide property tax refunds to Minnesotans after the fact. And that's what House File 4974 does. House File 4974 pays for itself by making multinational corporations actually pay their fair share. And let me show you how by starting with an overview of the bill. House File 4974 makes the property tax refund much more generous for about 476,000 homeowners, meaning it would lower property tax obligations. Meaning this bill would lower property tax obligations for 81% of Minnesota families who claim the homestead credit. While refunds will vary, the department estimates that the average increase will be approximately $93, so almost $100. The other part of this bill pays for this reduction in property taxes with the creation of a new audit unit at the Department of Revenue. House File 4974 provides this new tax compliance program at the department with ongoing funding of $15 million each year to use advanced tax analytics and business intelligence tools to improve collection activities, prioritizing activities that would provide a higher rate of return. It's estimated that the investment that House File 4974 makes in enhancing the state of Minnesota's ability to track and detect fraud in tax returns will have at least a 1-4 return, meaning that the bill is close to being revenue neutral, if not net positive, in later years. So who is being taxed? And in case people at home are watching and getting nervous, I want to make sure that there's no ambiguity that the text of the bill asks the department to prioritize corporations and complex pass-through entities and individual income tax filings of more than $500,000. I've said this in committee before that Minnesotans should ask who is being taxed when they hear about any tax proposal, because the experience of a typical Minnesota taxpayer is very different than a multinational corporation or a billionaire. You'd have to be in the highest income tax bracket to even potentially be affected by this bill. And I'll show this by going through an example of what many folks went through a couple weeks ago on tax day when they filed their taxes on April 15th. For most families, that means simply turning in your W-2 showing the money you've already withheld. My goal is typically to zero out, right? Because You know, if you've withheld enough money, that means maybe you pay back $20 or you get back $50. For folks with 1099s, the general rule of thumb I've heard is that you save about a third of or 30% of your invoices to pay for your tax liability. We know Minnesota families work hard. This bill seeks to reward that with an increased property tax refund, paid for by increased scrutiny on billion-dollar corporations. For large multinational corporations, tax day looks really different than just turning in your W-2s. Let's go through an example with Meta. In February of this year, Meta, or Facebook, disclosed that it paid an effective federal income tax rate of 3.6%. This is the lowest it has recorded since the company went public as Facebook in 2012. Meta made a record $79 billion in just U.S. income last year, which is a 20% increase from its record 2024 earnings. In case you're curious, the federal income tax rate is 21%, but companies like Meta often pay even less than that as a share of their profits because of the many special tax breaks and loopholes that are in place. And there are some new ones, too, created by HR1. If Meta had paid 21% of its $79 billion in profits last year, it should have paid $16.5 billion in federal corporate income taxes. Instead, Meta reported a current federal tax expense, or the company's best estimate of its income tax bill for the year of 2025, of just $2.8 billion, or 3.6% of its profits. And then the curious thing is that in the same filing to the SEC, Meta also says that $2.8 billion of its tax expense for the year took the form of uncertain tax benefits. This means that Meta claimed these tax breaks on its tax return when it filed to the IRS. But because the company believes that these tax breaks, accounting to $2.8 billion, are likely to be ruled illegal in an audit, they aren't allowed to claim them for the purposes of their annual financial report to the Securities and Exchange Commission. So that's where I'm getting all of these numbers from. So if Meta ultimately gets to keep these $2.8 billion in probably illegal tax breaks, this means that they paid $0 in taxes in 2025. So let me repeat, right? Meta says that in 2025, they probably owe $2.8 billion to the government. But in the same filing, they also say that they could potentially write off this $2.8 billion in tax expenses. And that's probably what they claim in their tax filing to the IRS. But the only people who can actually verify and catch that is auditors. So this is where it's really important that the IRS plays a critical role. IRS auditors can help determine whether Facebook pays $0 in taxes or merely 3.5% of its profits. At the federal level, we know that this is a challenge because Trump's DOGE team purged the IRS auditing team last year. At least 170 IRS attorneys withdrew from federal tax court cases in 2025. At least 60 of these people did because they left the agency, and others were assigned to different tasks. This is why it's so important for Minnesota to find its own way to continue ensuring tax compliance at the state level. House File 4974 addresses this need and uses the increased revenue to provide increased property tax refunds to working Minnesotans who don't have hundreds of tax lawyers working to reduce their tax liability. And with that, I'm ready for member discussion.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Lee. Is there anyone present who wishes to testify on House File 4974 as amended? All right, not seeing any, we will move to member discussion. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this bill forward. This is similar to a bill that we heard in committee that I authored, House File 3913, which talked about giving, you know, more auditing capabilities at the Department of Revenue. But this bill is even better because it focuses on ways to, with more clarity and to make sure that homeowners would be the beneficiaries of this additional revenue raised. And Representative Lee, you raised so many good points. This is simply a way to make sure that we're, you know, if we want to be serious about fraud and public stewardship of our resources, when you look at the brain drain that's happened at the IRS at the federal level and the intentional actions, frankly, to make it so, it makes sense that we would step up our game here in Minnesota to make sure that public tax dollars are, you know, going to the places that they should. So this is a really good bill, an important one, and Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call vote on this.
Representative Howard has requested a roll call. There will be a roll call. Is there any further discussion to House File 4974 as amended? Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee. So I see that you are estimating in the language of the bill, which I find unusual, that this initiative is expected to result in new general fund revenues of $20 million for the biennium ending June 30th, 2027, and $120 million for the biennium ending June 30th, 2029. So it's very unusual to see estimates of the impact of the fiscal impact in statute, so I wondered why that's in the bill, and I also wondered where that number comes from. I know it's not reflected in the revenue note. Will there be a fiscal note?
Representative Lee.
Yes, Madam Chair. So I think because we would be adding FTEs, you know, when we get to the point, definitely a fiscal note for that. So let's see. I'm actually really glad you asked this question. According to my analysis and staff analysis, if we look in the legislative reference library, the Department of Revenue has actually done, like, I think almost 10 years of reports detailing how much the state gets in revenues from their tax compliance activities. And so a 1-to-4 return is actually on the low end of how much money state auditors actually capture when we actually make sure that people comply with existing tax law. If we look back to, I think, like 2003 is like when the department started tracking how much revenue actually comes in from these audits. Sometimes in certain years, like, we see a return of 1 to 10. And so the conservative estimate here is actually that you'd get a 1-to-4 return.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. And why is that in the statute language?
Representative Lee.
That's just to guide our expectations. As you know, the department reads bill text here. I mean, if you are interested in moving forward with this, you know, we can take it up, but that's our estimate.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will also add that, you know, the governor has included compliance initiatives in his budgets for the last couple of years. We've had freestanding hearings on increased compliance initiatives, and so there is a fair amount of data out there, as Representative Lee outlined in her comments. Is there any further discussion? Chair Davids.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. If the department could come to the table here.
Ms. Bears is coming up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I find the questions of Chair Robbins very pertinent, and it's kind of interesting how this is written here and what they want to put in the statute. To the department, what would happen if the dollars that they're projecting don't come in? How is that handled?
Ms. Bears.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director for the Department of Revenue. Madam Chair, Chair Davids, I'm not sure. I would have to get back to you on that question. I'm not sure that's happened in a situation previously.
Chair Davids.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And we can talk offline, but as I think Chair Robbins really hit the nail on the head here with the way we're looking at doing it here, it's a bit odd, I might add. So thank you, Ms. Bears. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, is there any further discussion on House File 4974 as amended? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call. There seems to have been a mass exodus out of committee on the other side of the table, I've noticed. It's interesting. As we get started with our roll call.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I do know that there are school kids coming in. That's pretty important.
Indeed it is, Mr. Chair.
The kids, because I recruit them to go to Winona State.
Won't someone please think of the children?
Should I do my closing while we wait for these folks to return?
Yeah, my apologies. Representative Lee, okay. Please proceed.
Something closing. House File 4974 is important because it shows us that if multinational corporations actually pay their fair share, everyone in Minnesota could benefit. We know that the Trump IRS has decided to just not enforce tax law, and House File 4974 provides us an opportunity to fill that gap, to invest in a new audit unit at the Department of Revenue that actually redistributes these revenues to hardworking Minnesotans. So ask for member support.
Thank you very much, Representative Lee. With that, Rep. Lee will renew her motion that House File 4974, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Joy?
No thanks to grow government.
Representative Norris?
Aye.
Representative Egbaje?
Aye.
Representative Anderson? Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Howards?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Johnson? Representative Koslowski?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Yes.
Representative Roach?
No.
Representative Robbins?
No.
Representative Schwartz? Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Swiatkowski? Representative Warwas? Representative Wiener?
No.
Representative Witte? Representative Joachim?
Yes.
There being 11 ayes and 6 nays, the motion does not prevail. Up next, House File 4845, Representative Hollins. As Rep. Hollins is moving to the table, she will move that House File 4845 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Welcome to your committee, Representative Hollins. Please proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, and committee members. This is a pretty simple bill. It modernizes Minnesota income tax structure and strengthens local government funding by updating tax brackets, adding a new top-tier tax bracket for highest earners, and increasing state aid to cities and counties. The bill adjusts Minnesota's individual income tax brackets upwards across all filing statuses to reflect inflation and introduces a new fifth tax bracket with a 10.85% rate on high income earners. So those are folks who earn over $1 million for joint filers with lower thresholds for other filers. It updates the inflation adjustment baseline year to 2026, ensuring future bracket adjustments remain accurate. In addition, the bill significantly increases local government aid and county program aid to counties beginning in 2026, providing expanded resources for local services. It also requires the Department of Revenue to recertify aid distributions to reflect those changes. And I heard there's a lot of people who want to talk about it, so I'll cede my time to them.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. With that, we will move to testifiers. First up, Mayor Herr, welcome back to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kali Herr, and I'm the Mayor of St. Paul. I appreciate the opportunity to come this morning to support Representative Hollins' bill, House File 4845. This bill is a bill that is near and dear to my heart, as I was the chief author of the fifth-tier bill when I was here at the legislature, and I really appreciate how Representative Hollins has really honed in how these funds will get used. St. Paul's two largest general fund revenue sources are property taxes and LGA. Unlike sales tax and income tax relied upon by state budget, property taxes and LGA do not automatically grow with the economy. St. Paul's costs continue to grow. However, you know, with inflationary pressures, we do not have any increases with LGA to support that. For example, with just healthcare costs, utilities, capital repairs, You know, that drives us up our cost every year. For our, just our police and fire departments alone, it's projected to grow $7 million in 2026. This gap creates this creates a big gap for cities cost to pay for basic services. And I know, I think a couple of our house members were rescued by our fire department from one of the elevators not too long ago, that lots of people use our city services, and those all fall on the taxpayers of St. Paul. I think that it is important to illustrate the need for this bill and its importance. I think, as many of you already know, that up until 2007, LGA met the city's needs, and since then the gap has just widened every year. 43% of our need based on the LGA formula is not actually met. Based on the LGA formula, I mean, we should be getting, as a city, $146 million, and the city of St. Paul gets $82 million, should be getting $82 million in 2026. That's only 50% funding for our total unmet need, and St. Paul actually has the highest unmet need in the state and the biggest gap between the unmet need and the LGA received. And so we really greatly appreciate Representative Hollins's bill and the ability to impact our LGA in a positive way. We do know that other cities and mayors have the same story as St. Paul, and you have letters from city organizations and counties in your packet today, and I encourage you all to include this in your omnibus bill. So thank you so much for giving me time to testify today.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mayor Herr. Up next is Britt Anbacht. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for being with us. Please introduce yourself as you get started.
Good morning, Co-Chair Gomez and Co-Chair Davids and members of the committee. My name is Britt Anbacht. I live in Minneapolis. I'm here today as a board member of Neighbors for Neighbors. We organize for Minnesota where every Minnesotan can find a home they love and can afford where they want to live. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House File 4845. I share the author's desire for a new fifth bracket with a progressive taxation schedule. I think it is important that all Minnesotans pay their fair share to ensure our collective well-being. But I'm very concerned that the money is destined to be distributed to cities that do not share the vision of collective well-being. While some cities, like St. Paul, have made changes to their zoning codes in order to allow more homes, many cities have not. And for example, in 2023, this body passed historic funding for new housing projects. Money that has not and cannot be spent because there's nowhere to where it is legal to build the new homes this legislature funded. Cities continue to uphold policies that enshrine economic and racial segregation by preventing new homes from being built or requiring large homes on large lots, the most expensive home type. That exclusion of new homes increases individual property taxes by preventing new neighbors from sharing the city's expenses. We want a Minnesota where people take care of their neighbors. But many cities only allow acceptable new neighbors, like senior living developments. Even then, approval processes prevent most new homes from being built without 3 or more years of process and delay before even breaking ground. If we want to be a growing and thriving state, we cannot continue to allow mayors and city officials to deny homes and exclude our fellow Minnesotans from calling their city home. Please don't increase the funding for cities that do not allow our taxes to house our neighbors. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, Dalton Danielson. Welcome to the committee. Please
proceed. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Dalton Danielson, Fiscal Policy Director with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I'm here today to respectfully oppose House File 4845. And while we have, and while we understand the LGA and other needs included in this bill, we have concerns that this proposal relies on a new, higher individual income tax rate that risks undermining Minnesota's competitiveness without directly addressing cost of living or cost of business pressures, and will make Minnesota less competitive for business and the talent that comes with it. House File 4845 establishes a new fifth-tier income tax rate of 10.85%, applying to higher income earners, including many small business owners who pay personal income taxes through the individual code. For employers competing nationally for talent and for entrepreneurs deciding where to grow, the cumulative impact of higher top-tier taxes makes Minnesota a more challenging place to invest, hire, and expand. Members, talent matters. In this bill, we're talking about a potential barrier to bringing in top talent in all industries. We're talking about the top doctors, the top lawyers, the top business professionals, the top entrepreneurs, and other specialized services. Finally, we believe there are other ways to strengthen local finances and address the cost of living, the cost of business, without further increasing the tax burden on income, particularly at a time when Minnesota already has one of the higher top marginal rates in the country. For these reasons, we respectfully urge the committee to oppose House File 4845. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, Kenneth Garnier. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Gomez, Co-Chair Davids, and members of the committee. My name is Kenneth Winslow Garnier, and I am the Vice President of AFSCME Local 34 in Hennepin County. We represent almost 2,800 members that work at the county in social services. I'm a human service representative. I've worked for the county for 14 and a half years, and I'm here today to express AFSCME Council 5 support for House File 4845. And I want to thank the Representative Hollins for bringing this forward. My profession, at its core, is helping people get services that they need to live with dignity and respect in Hennepin County. We believe that we can address gaps in society by paying a little bit more to guarantee everyone a decent standard of living. This work is inherently about redistributing some resources from those that can afford to help a little bit, and we can pick up those that need a little bit of help. Because I work in human services and I'm a frontline worker, I really see the impacts of what these services do to people, do for people in the community. And the legislator has the ability to distribute resources and help counties with program aid and local government aid. Counties and cities receive some financial assistance that's based on need. Counties that have an older population or more residents on SNAP get more CPA so that we can have the number of people required to get the resources to those that are eligible for them. This is a vital revenue for all 87 counties. And we also know that this is insufficient to meet our needs and that the cost of everything will be increasing in coming months. So given the impact that the HR1 is going to have on counties that administer our social safety net, we need the legislature to consider how we're going to meet the new requirements to increase determination frequency and also reduce SNAP error rates. Without some intervention, it will be county property taxpayers who bear the brunt of paying for benefits of administration, and it will be disproportionate. So by creating a fifth-tier income tax, you can alleviate the taxes working people pay and improve access to public programs. So we encourage you to pass House File 4845, and thank you, Representative Hollins, for this bill, and thank you, members, for considering my testimony today.
Thank you for your testimony, Kevin Garnier, and thank you for your work. Brian Cook. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Gomez, members of the House Taxes Committee. My name is Brian Cook. I'm the Director of Tax, Fiscal Policy, and Elections for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber represents more than 6,300 businesses of all sizes in all corners of the state who employ more than 500 million employees. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns with Representative Hollins, House File 4845. The bill seeks to provide cities and counties with additional state aids by imposing a new fifth-tier individual income tax rate of 10.85%. In doing so, it would undermine Minnesota's economic competitiveness by making our tax environment even less attractive for businesses and harm talent recruitment and retention. The vast majority of businesses in this state pay taxes through the individual income tax. A number of these businesses could then face a substantial tax increase under the bill. I'd also point out these are the same businesses facing $400 to $500 million in increased federal taxes this year as a result of the expiration of the state's PTE tax. Employees and businesses have choices, and increasing Minnesota's already high tax rates would put us at a clear disadvantage. Since 2021, 26 states governed by both Republicans and Democrats have cut individual income tax rates, corporate tax rates, or both. Minnesota currently has the sixth highest top income tax rate in the country, and the workforce has never been more mobile. The fifth tier rate proposed in this bill would bump us past Oregon and New Jersey to fourth place, where we would only be 0.05% behind New York for third place, 0.15% behind Hawaii for second, and 2.45% behind California for first. We would be a full 3.2% above our next highest tax neighbor in Wisconsin, with other bordering states being 7% or more less. We also have concerns that using a fifth-tier rate could exacerbate some of the problems that it is trying to solve. One of the many reasons that local governments are being strained is the reduction in the valuation of commercial properties. Commercial properties are less valuable when they don't have businesses to fill them. We're already a high-cost state to do business in, and a new fifth-tier rate would be yet another business barrier for business investment in Minnesota, which would have a negative impact on building occupancy. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Eric Harris-Bernstein. Welcome to the committee. Sorry, I didn't give you guys any warning of who was on deck.
I was buried back there.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Chair Gomez, members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I'm the director of We Make Minnesota. We're a labor grassroots coalition working on state tax and budget issues. Thanks for the opportunity to share our perspective on HF 4845, which would create a fifth income tax bracket for high earners and use the majority of the revenues to increase LGA and CPA. We appreciate the effort in this bill to raise revenue from those who can afford it and use that money for important public services that we all depend on. This bill would increase taxes on less than the top 1% of all earners. The state doesn't have statistics on this small group, but households earning $500,000 a year pay a total effective tax rate of 11.7% compared to 12.5% for middle-income households. Minnesota has been very good to these households, and I think it's appropriate that they pay a little bit more to make sure everyone has their needs met. This bill also touches on an important theme in Minnesota politics, which is the relationship between state and local funding. The Minnesota miracle moved our state towards a more cooperative approach, where higher state revenues are redistributed to equalize resources for local governments. However, in subsequent decades, the state abandoned that promise, leaving local governments to make up the difference. This bill would help restore the ethos of the Minnesota miracle and relieve rising property tax burdens, which are prominent across the state. More broadly, this bill demonstrates the universal public investment needs demonstrated by support public investment needs across our state, which is demonstrated by 31 new local option sales tax proposals this year, costing more than $1.3 billion over the next few decades. Our coalition believes that Minnesota has the ability to meet these needs if we're able to have a more clear-eyed and open-minded conversation about a strong tax code. This session, we have supported a number of proposals that would improve our tax code and create revenue for these needs that we seem to all agree on. So we appreciate this proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. That's the end of folks who signed up to testify. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on House File 4845? Not seeing any, we'll move to member discussion. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair. And I understand and I appreciate us trying to get the LGA and CA increased. I do appreciate that. Creating another tax bracket doesn't work for me, you know, especially when we saw the February and March estimates were down $126 million in individual income tax that came in. I think we're losing that money, and now we're going to create another bracket to try to fill that gap. I think one of the things we should be looking at here is if we want to fill LGA and CPA with more money instead of taxing people, we should look at the cannabis tax. We raised it from 10 to 15%, and we took away the cities and the LGAs, and we took away that. So we should look at giving them back maybe 5% of that money to CAs and LGAs. That's what we should be looking at, because that money's there today. This isn't trying to tax somebody. As we see, our revenues went down $126 million. As we continue to finish up the tax committee this year, there is a theme, raising taxes. That's what the theme is. When's enough enough? We got to go after millionaires and billionaires. We haven't even passed pastoral entity tax, which is zero fiscal costs. We just continue and continue targeting earners and picking winners and losers. And I think this is the wrong way. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill forward in the discussion. LGA and CPA, before I got elected, obviously, I had to look into it. I didn't even know what it was for. But when you go back and look at it, it was meant to serve a problem. high property taxes. It was put into place where there was issues. So here we are nearly 50 years later, because I believe it was put in the early, mid-70s, and we're still dealing with the same issue, which means after all this time, we haven't solved the problem. And when we say we need to stick more into LGA and CPA, we're also saying that our property taxes are probably too high, which in this state, we are literally driving people and businesses out. Not my opinion. If you look at the IRS's data and the adjusted gross income that has left the state, which is well documented, we're looking at billions of dollars. So a bill like this that hits that top tier, once again, those are the people that can lead. Those are the people that do lead. That's once again documented. 50 to 70% of that adjusted gross income is in those top earners. They will simply lead. And anybody in the tax committee, I'm sure, has heard me talk about The Economist, and I'm sure most people are well aware of the Laffer curve. There is a diminishing return after a certain point. We have gone beyond that point. We have gone over that point. We are overtaxing our citizens in this state. We do not have a taxing problem in this state. We have a spending problem in this state. We have a problem with $9 billion worth of fraud in this state. If we want to fix our problems with LGA CPA, I would suggest that we heavily go after the fraud and minimize our spending in this government before we look at taxing our citizens more. If this was a business, we would obviously be looking at returns and input, output, and saying, yep, something needs to change here. But it doesn't seem like we're taking this fraud issue seriously, because $9 billion worth of fraud, and how much of that have we clawed back? And yet the only thing we're talking about is raising more taxes. So I'm sorry, but this bill does not serve the purpose, and it does not bring attention to what we should be dealing with, and that is the massive amounts of fraud that have been perpetrated in this state. Thank you.
Representative Hollins. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I hear what you're saying, Representative Weiner. I appreciate your comments. If anybody knows about high property taxes, it's the citizens of St. Paul, where we have a significantly higher property tax rate than the vast majority of the state of Minnesota. We are feeling a pinch like you cannot believe. But that's part of the reason why we're bringing this forward, is because there are people who are not paying their fair share. And the reality is this mostly benefits greater Minnesota, which is why we're hearing people oppose it, because most of the high earners in the state of Minnesota are within the metro area. They are in Minneapolis and St. Paul and the western suburbs of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And if we are able to bring that new tax rate in and then put it to LGA, that helps the people in your district pay less property taxes. So actually, this is a win for your people. The people who should be opposing it are the folks who represent Minnetonka and Wayzata and those areas, because they're the ones that would be disproportionately impacted by it.
Representative Roach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for House Research. What is the total allocation for LGAs in the state? Do we know that number?
Mr. Swanson, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair and Representative Roach, the total annual appropriation for LGA is just over $644 million.
Mr. Roach? Or, geez, okay, I'm really batting a thousand here. Representative Roach.
Okay, thank you. So the problem that, I just heard from Representative Hollins is that this you know, benefits some of the rural communities. But I'm looking at the numbers here, and since, you know, 2015, there has been first of all, the $644 million based on this this bill, this proposal, nearly one-third of the entire LGAs in the entire state would be allocated to two cities in the entire state. One-third. So to say that this is impacting greater Minnesota is, I think, disingenuous. When I look at numbers here, the largest community in my district has continued to have decrease in their LGAs, while Minneapolis has increased, based on this, and St. Paul, nearly double. So the people of my community get zero, even with this new proposal. So it's not benefiting the great people of Farmington and in the large part of my district. But we're seeing a 27% increase for St. Paul. $104 million in LGAs for St. Paul. Minneapolis, an 18% increase. Almost $97 million. I'm sorry, but if I'm going to use the language from my colleagues on the other side, this isn't equitable. Not in any way, shape, or form. So if we're going to be serious about helping people and saving their property taxes, the reason why Minneapolis and St. Paul is struggling with the increased property taxes is because of policies that are being put on them through a trifecta that is negatively impacting their ability to pay their property taxes with unfunded mandates. So if we're going to be honest about giving people help paying their property taxes, how about we actually stop mandating an umbrella approach to all 87 counties, a one-size-fits-all model? This is not a fix. This is a campaign strategy to try to get rural members to take a bad vote. It's disingenuous, and I don't support this.
As a reminder, this bill is being laid over. Representative Hans.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to bring that up. Not a bad vote to take, because there is no vote being taken. But what I will say is the majority of tax revenue comes from the metro area and flows outwards into the rest of the state. And that is factual. That is just pure fact. We have population density. We have the majority of millionaires and billionaires live within the Twin Cities and within the metro area. And so we would love to just keep our money and keep it here in the city of St. Paul, but that's not how income taxes work in the state. It is not the way, I mean, you've seen Summit Avenue. It'd be nice to keep that money here. That would be fantastic. We need help with our roads. We need help with our schools. We need help with everything. But the reality is that's not how the system works. And so if you would like to propose a tax situation where each individual city or county gets to keep their own tax of his, I would be happy to support that.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Up next, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wasn't really going to talk on this, but now I'm kind of forced to. Most of you know that in the last 8 years I've been here, I've been working on how do we find a possible funding source for EMS? Because it's happening. What the Honorable Mayor of St. Paul didn't mention is last year when she wasn't in charge, the city of St. Paul had to write off $800 million in EMS services that could not be paid. And it shows the demographic of what St. Paul is going towards as a Medicare-Medicaid reimbursement fund. Many of the districts in my friends across the aisle are in that same situation of a Medicare-Medicaid fund. This money, you know, the LGA is one of the areas we looked at real closely to see if that could fund it. You are in trouble. We all are in trouble because our cities are starting to have issues with their public services. I don't know if it's a fifth tier. I don't know what it is, but something has to be done, because we won't just be trying to look at how we're going to save Hennepin County. We will be looking at you not having a response time of 3 hours for an ambulance. And so I really regret when, I'm sorry, my good friend Representative Roach says that this does not benefit Farmington. Where did you drive to today from Farmington? You drove to St. Paul. If somebody hit your car on the way here, St. Paul Fire is going to respond to that. And we forget that the core cities, sure, they need our help, but we all use them, even to this day. And so I think we got to take a deep breath in a bipartisan way and figure out where we're going to raise this. And then I also work with the business community real close. The businesses are coming. They are coming regardless what we're hearing, the rhetoric. I have a number of them coming into Rosemount that are really big businesses. The reason they're coming here is because of our schools, because
Some of our kids can graduate from high school and be able to work in these environments right away. So, you know, we talk about where can we make the cuts? Is it in education? Is it to our seniors? Is it to our values that both of us value on both sides of the aisle? I don't know. And that's one of the biggest questions when someone comes to me and says, oh, just cut 2% across the board. Where is that cut going to be? And I know, and I regret the fact that I'm hearing that we have done nothing about fraud, because we have. And I think you should check your data, because I had the number, but I don't have it. We have clawed back money. You heard of 20 different places that were raided. The governor brought it up last night. We are working on that together. This is systemic from a decade ago. And I think, yeah, there's some money there, but it's not going to save all of our LGA, because I want to go snowmobiling. I want to go water skiing in different places in your districts, and I want to make sure that I'm not waiting 2 hours for an ambulance or 2 hours for any kind of public service. So I get real frustrated when we get in this. You can tell I'm a little emotional about it, but it's about you and I. And so we really need to come up with a solution. Is it this? I'm not opposed to anything like this. So thank you, Madam Chair, for my rant.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Up next, Representative Anderson.
I won't rant.
You never would, Rep. Anderson.
I just want to remind, you know, that a lot of this is caused by the mandates that we've created, this legislature has created, and put on cities and counties. And cities and counties are suffering because of that. And you know, we have to recognize that there's only so much money around. And you can't keep passing programs and asking either state taxpayers or property taxpayers or sales taxpayers to continue to pay these bills. This is one of my favorite little quotes, and I think we need to be reminded about this. And it's from Margaret Thatcher. She says, the problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. And I think that that is what's happening here in the state. And if we continue on this path where we're expanding government dramatically, we are raising taxes dramatically. Now we're talking about wealth taxes. Now we're talking about fifth tier taxes. If we continue this, we're going to run out of other people's money. Because first of all, people with money are going to leave. They already are leaving. In fact, 80% of the tax brackets, people are leaving. You know, every tax bracket except the bottom tax bracket, people are leaving. That is the IRS data from the last year. And so people are leaving. And that's a bad, bad thing for the state. Really bad. But we can't continue this until we just end up, you know, broke. But I think that's what's happening, and that's what's going to happen. So I think we should take the words, you know, take the advice from Prime Minister Thatcher, and remember that dollars, you know, don't grow on trees. So thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if that was a rant. We'll have to decide.
It was not.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
It wasn't a rant. I have a good tax
It was a wonderful rant.
For
okay.
raise money. So.
All right, tax quotes. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Representative Hollins. This is an interesting bill of how to raise funds for local government aid. And LGA and CPA, it's very important to our cities and counties that we serve in my district. You know, it helps balance their budgets. They say that it lowers property taxes, although sometimes I say it needs to show up on my property statement, you know, for me to say, yes, you do lower that. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. And the aid also helps these local jurisdictions to cover all the requirements that we pass at the legislature. And there are quite a few. When I was a county commissioner, at the end of the room, there was this bookcase and had all the volumes of all the statutes and bills that passed since we became the state. And sometimes it was somewhat irritating to see the volume after volume of all the bills that have been passed. My recommendation, and I would be in favor of, is looking at some of these unfunded mandates that we require counties and cities to fulfill, and to see if there are some of them that we can start rolling back to help these local governments, you know, and what that they do. I mean, that may be a little bit difficult, but I'd be in favor of at least looking at what those could be, because maybe some of these mandates have been on for decades and they no longer do what they were originally intended to do. So that would be my recommendation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Harder. Representative Smith.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. This probably is going to be a rant. Several times my colleagues have said today, let's be serious about this. So let's sit back and let's talk about this here. We all agree, because we've talked about this in this committee, that rising property taxes are an extremely important issue to every single Minnesotan. Right? We're on the same page there. All right, so how do we get to helping Minnesotans with rising property taxes? As all of you know, the state does not levy local property taxes. That in Minnesota is done by counties and cities. They decide on that levy based on their budget. The cities and counties have done this multiple times. Their costs are rising. And we can talk about a lot of different reasons that it's rising. I would point out to the federal government HR 1 that has heaped all kinds of responsibilities onto the state administratively and given them no money to do that and all the federal savings they gave to the wealthiest Americans. But maybe we can just disagree on that, but the fact is that the property taxes are rising. Okay, how do we help? Well, we can give targeted property tax relief, which is a bill we just heard and was voted down by every single Republican colleague that was in the room, which is not very many. And then we heard this bill, which will give LGA and CPA to counties and cities. It is funding to the counties and cities. So you cannot complain about unfunded mandates and then talk against a bill that would help fund the cities and counties that are doing those mandates.
What?
Makes no sense. We're giving them funding through CPA and through LGA. And if you want to talk about Margaret Thatcher, and we're going to run out of other people's money, do you know what those people who are making, let me see, hold on, what is this bill? Married couples making over $1 million or single people making over $600,000. With their money, those people are engaging in space races for fun. And we're saying that local people in rural Minnesota have to wait 3 hours for an ambulance because we can't take any of that money. Because they can't contribute to the state of Minnesota more. That is ridiculous. I might also point out the one specific funding mechanism that was mentioned here was the cannabis tax. In 2025, the cannabis tax raised $25 million total, which is, and this is true, less than $311 million that this bill would give to CPA and LGA. So we are serious about this problem. We want to help our cities, and we need to make sure that the wealthiest among us are contributing to society so that we can have local governments that are well-funded. Thank you, Representative Hollins, for this bill.
All right. Thank you. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hollins. We chatted a little about this. I very much support the concept of this bill, which is a more equitable tax system and one where we're taking a holistic view to make sure that we're funding essential public needs, we're not putting too much pressure on local property taxpayers and have huge disparities in terms of what that burden looks like. I think that's a worthy goal. What I do take issue with or think at least needs more interrogation is if LGA is the chief mechanism to deliver on that goal. You know, as Representative Hewitt mentioned, the EMS need, our needs to rebuild our infrastructure and roads, housing, why not perhaps take a more direct approach and fund those direct outcomes? Because I think the outcomes are the critical piece for us here. And to lower property taxes, another direct outcome that we could look at doing. And I think that LGA has an important role. But cities do not have a perfect track record of delivering on those outcomes. And so we should just have a serious conversation about what our state resources are delivering. And to this end, I also take some issue with raising additional taxes, giving them to cities
knowing that year over year, they're using tax dollars to increase the amount of dollars they're spending on legislative lobbying, us here. Do you know that last year, our large city groups, powerful groups, spent north of $2 million of people's tax dollars just to lobby the legislature? Yeah. That's more than big pharma, that's more than big oil, and you know, often that kind of lobbying is usually having one hand out for more money from the state and the other to fight for a status quo that's often making this property tax issue worse. And so, you know, as others have mentioned, there's an important relationship that we have to have and partnership between the city and the state level, and LGA certainly should be a part of that conversation. But if we are going to raise new revenue, I think we just need to integrate more if LGA is the sole or the main way to get to these outcomes that I think we all share.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Is there any further discussion before we go to Chair Davids to wrap us up? Representative Lee.
Yes, very quickly. Thank you, Madam Chair. As a member from St. Paul and Ramsey, I just want to make sure that we correct the record because we started discussion with misunderstandings of what LGA and CPA does. I know we have new members of the tax committee here, and so I just want to make sure folks understand that the CPA formula actually penalizes large counties like Ramsey and Hennepin, and so our residents in Ramsey County actually pay more money into state revenues than they get back through CPA and LGA distributions. So it is absolutely true that like this LGA CPA formula is the way that the state equitably makes sure that regardless of which county you live in, you know, you get social services from the city or the county, and it redistributes that wealth in a way that really disadvantages people who live in St. Paul and Hennepin. And so it's not that Representative Hollins is bringing this bill to benefit just the metro. This bill actually benefits everyone, and everyone has runs in their packets on the increase to city budgets and county budgets here. And so if you just look at the first page of the county runs, Anoka County, Carver, Scott, and Washington County, they all get an increase to their CPA that's actually higher than the percentage increase to Ramsey or Hennepin. And so I want to make sure folks understand that. I think the two things that I take issue the most in this conversation is that we're actually getting net migration into Minnesota. I think there was a qualifier that maybe some higher income folks may be leaving, but on net, we are definitely getting more people in Minnesota because it's a good place to live. We've made Minnesota a place where people want to raise their families because we've increased the child tax credit and passed paid leave. But most important, as someone who cares about economics, I want to make sure folks understand that the Laffer curve and like just Laffer's work has actually been shown to be actually quite lazy. There's this talking point that you know when you don't tax people, like your job creation increases like 62%. But that's actually been debunked because it takes an average of job growth in like I think 7 or 9 states. And so I want to make sure folks understand that when we're quoting economic theory, we're actually reading the assumptions and understanding what that means. But the important part is averages here, right? And I want to make sure folks understand this bill equitably funds all counties across Minnesota. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll keep this brief. Also,
we have to get to Representative Smith's bill. I think we'll have good discussion on that one too. 10:41.
Yeah. No, I'm an economist by education. I'm also, like Representative Lee and probably Representative Robbins, very familiar with Arthur Laffer's famous curve drawn on the napkin. But as Representative Lee points out, there has never been any empirical evidence that reducing tax rates increases revenue or vice versa within the range of tax rates that we have anywhere in the country right now. And to the other point I wanted to raise is that Representative Weiner has observed we've had the local government aid program forever and ever in this state designed to address this problem. However, in 2003, LGA rates were slashed in order to balance the state budget. Basically, the state balanced its budget that year by slashing aid to cities, counties, and school districts, which is why anytime you're seeing a financial graph from one of your school districts, they always use 2003 as the baseline year because that's the year aids to local governments were slashed. And you know, graphs of you know, state, local government, and school district revenues since then show a very clear relationship between reductions in state aid and its corresponding increases in levies for school districts and property tax rates for cities and counties.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion before we go to Chair Davids and then Rep. Hollins to wrap us up? Not seeing any. Chair Davids.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think I said some time ago, does this bill get us closer to agreement or further away? We have 17 days left. Does this bill get us closer to a deal or put us further away? I would argue that this puts us way further away. And as far as, I'm very disappointed we're actually not voting on this, but I respect you, Madam Chair, and it'll be laid over. But I wanted to vote on this thing. Oh, man. What a great vote this is for our side of the aisle over here. Fifth income tax tier, amazing. Class warfare, that's all this is. This is class warfare. Somebody has something and then somebody that doesn't have it wants it. Okay, that's the way this works. And it's been going on for a very, very long time. I'm gonna make a quote here and you have to tell me who said it. You don't help the poor by hurting the rich. Who said that? Isn't it Abraham Lincoln attributed to that one?
I think Kirk Dowd said it.
It was actually the Reverend William J.H. Becker, a Presbyterian minister, said that, and he's so right. You don't help the poor by hurting the rich. That's not how it works. I listened to Phil Graham one time, who was a U.S. senator from Texas, at a Republican convention. He got there and he says, you know, I never had a job from a poll man. And that's so true. I never forgot that. I've never had a job from a poll man. Now, this is so interesting to me. When we're talking about, now we got to fund LGA and CPA all of a sudden. Where were you last year? Where were you last year when the governor's budget came slashing millions and millions of dollars of CPA and LGA? And the DFL in the House, the DFL in the Senate supported that. You were supporting the governor's budget. Slashing LGA. Who said no? We are not cutting LGA or CPA. Who said no, 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 until they finally went with me and said, I guess he's serious about this. We're not cutting LGA and CPA. Why? Because it's a direct property tax increase. That's why this side of the aisle demanded that that not happen. Now all of a sudden we're getting religion. So we are making progress here. But my question is, how many times you hear fair share? Nobody can define what that means. Nobody knows what it is, but people say it. How much is enough? How much do you need? I'll make a deal with you. I'll vote for this bill if you're done raising taxes. You're done. No more. No more. There are four fifth-tier bills out there in this legislative session. Four. All doing something different. But my question is, how much is enough? What is the fair share? You take an $18 billion surplus. You take $10 billion in tax increases, and that's not enough. I beg my friends on the other side of the aisle, okay, you're going to go blow some money. Fine, I get that. But don't put it in the base. What did they do? They put it in the base. So now instead of a 50-something billion-dollar budget, we got a $70 billion-something budget. In 2023, I remember when the tax bill left the House with inflators on LGA and CPA. Now, if somebody's serious about that, you do that. It came back without inflators. Amazing. Amazing. And one thing that I'm really, really concerned about, and, well, first of all, the cities and the counties, they see unfunded mandates is their biggest problem. Mm-hmm. So when somebody said, you know, look at unfunded mandates, yeah, that's their biggest problem. So what really concerns me, and you know, I'm going to, and I've already got my literature for the campaign being written saying Greg David's killed the fifth tier. It's already in there. But one thing we're doing here is we're providing false hope. We had the Honorable Mayor, my good friend, Mayor Herr here, testifying on something that's not going to happen. Why do we do that to people? Why do we do that to people? It's not going to happen. I'll guarantee it, and I'm for imprint sure on this one. It's not going to happen, okay? So I don't know why we create false expectations. We have the Honorable Mayor of St. Paul coming in testifying for something that is not going to happen. I'm just not sure why we do that. So I respect the chair. We're not going to vote on this today, but boy, I sure wish we could. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to go to Representative Hans, but we have to do a little bit of correction of the revisionist, some of the revisionist history. There was no point at which the House DFL had a position to cut LGA and CPA last year, and that is true. You said the governor. You can say what you will about the Senate, who put that in their bill. The House DFL was steadfast in protecting LGA and CPA. And as you mentioned, yes, in 2023, we not only did we add an historic amount to both LGA and CPA, and we proposed putting an inflator on it, because we are serious about this issue, Mr. Chair, and because we've consistently put forward legislation when we have the power to do so that increases equitable funding for our local governments. It's also interesting to me that we only ask, is this moving us closer to a deal or further away on days when I have the gavel? Because we didn't talk about that yesterday, did we? I don't believe so. We're only worried about how it's not going to happen when the beneficiaries of something are the working people of our state. When you propose massive giveaways to the rich and corporations, you don't seem to have those same concerns. How much is enough? How much is enough? How much is enough for the people who are hoarding wealth while the rest of us struggle to make our monthly bills? That's the how much is enough question that I believe we need to be asking in these bodies.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Since my name was invoked. Of course, all the bills we heard yesterday would get us closer to a deal, in my opinion. But second of all, I do want to set the record straight. You are absolutely correct. It was the Senate that proposed that in their bill. It was the governor. It was not you.
At least we can agree on that, okay. Mr. Chair.
Okay, we will agree on that. And probably not a whole lot else, but that's fine.
Indeed it is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hollins, close us out, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the robust conversation. I have some stats about St. Paul. If anybody wants to look at it, we contribute a lot more than what we get for LGA. So if you're concerned about that, happy to give you data on that. But I feel like I have to respond because I also wish we had taken a vote on this. We're calling this class warfare, and I'm like, don't threaten me with a good time. This is class warfare. I also have a quote, because I've heard a couple of them thrown around, by the French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau. When the people shall have nothing more to eat, they will eat the rich.
Yeah. That was harsh.
As I stated previously, this bill modernizes Minnesota's income tax structure and it strengthens local government. It ensures that the wealthy support the good work that is being done across the entire state of Minnesota by all our cities and all our counties. I support this bill. I support taxing millionaires and billionaires. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. And with that, Representative Hollins will renew her motion that House File 4845 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. And the bill is laid over.
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
I'm very excited to get to the next bill, but I do notice a lot of members have returned. And I think it's important we talk about property
Madam
tax
Chair,
relief a little more.
Representative Smith has the floor.
Could we move to reconsider the vote on House Floor 4974?
Point of order.
Mr. Chair.
Why are we talking about which members in here or which members out of here? I see it happen on both sides.
Representative Davids, there is a motion before this committee. We will move to discussion on the motion. Do you have any discussion on Representative Smith's motion?
What's the motion?
Mr. Chair. Representative Smith.
I move to reconsider the vote on House File 4974.
Representative Smith has moved to reconsider the bill, the vote on House File 4974. Is there any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye. We're voting on the motion to reconsider, Representative Joy.
We're voting on the motion to reconsider?
Yes, we're not voting on the bill. We're voting on the motion to reconsider the bill. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye. All right.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Norris?
Aye.
Representative Egbaje?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Howard?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Kozlowski?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Yes.
Representative Roach?
No.
Representative Robbins?
No.
Representative Schwartz?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Switzinski? Representative Warwas?
No.
Representative Wiener?
No.
Representative Witte?
No.
Representative Joachim?
Yes.
There being 11 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The next bill on the calendar is House File 1041, Representative Smith. Rep. Smith will move that House File 1041 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill. Representative Smith, I understand you have an author's amendment titled A1. Would you like us to move the amendment?
That's correct, Madam Chair. It is a technical correction to move back some dates.
Rep. Smith has moved the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted, and the bill is in the form that the author would like. Representative Smith, to House File 1041 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. People are going to love this bill, I'm sure. There's a reason Americans in the 19th century started calling the ultra-wealthy robber barons. Because they recognized that at a certain point, the wealthy men running these massive companies weren't just being well compensated, but they were stealing the prosperity that was due to the workers who were actually creating that wealth. More than a century later, American politicians at all levels, including us in these chairs here today, have allowed a new generation of robber barons to rise in the United States. The ultra-wealthy are thriving, price gouging is everywhere, and the wages of working-class Minnesotans are stagnating. And perhaps no place makes this more clear than the skyrocketing rise of CEO pay. In the 1970s, CEOs made about $1 million annually, or about 20 to 30 times the median salary of their company's middle-class employees. Today, the average CEO at an S&P 500 company makes nearly $20 million annually. That puts their pay at 200 to 300 times higher than the average pay of a typical employee. That is nearly a 1,000% increase in wage disparity in only 50 years. According to the Economic Policy Institute, while worker pay increased by 15.3% from 1978, CEO pay has increased by 1,209.2%. Let me say that again to make sure that that is sinking into the room. Since 1978, working class workers, 15.3% increase in their wages. Millionaire and billionaire CEOs, I can't even do the scale with my hands, gets a 1,209.2% increase in their pay. We have been talking a lot this session about people taking advantage of our system to get rich off of the taxpayers' dollar. And no one is better at that scheme than mega corporations that pay their workers a near unlivable wage, leaving them to rely on SNAP and Medicaid and sticking Americans with the bill while they reap massive profits. How in the world is this something that we are okay with? We, as policymakers, should be utterly embarrassed and disgusted that we allow wealth created by working class Americans to be stolen from them by the very rich executives and be subsidized by Minnesota taxpayers. These elites first steal from their workers who create that wealth, and then they steal from all of us again by dodging taxes that help sustain our society. And let me give you a specific example. These are not just platitudes. I want to talk about CVS Health. Their CEO, David Joyner, made just about just over $21.2 million in 2025, while his median employee salary is $55,245. Now, for a family of three, that salary is just under 200% the federal poverty line. But CVS Health is doing just fine. They reported $6.57 billion in U.S. income in just 2025. And for all that income, do you on this tax committee know how much they paid in federal income tax on that? $0. Meaning that the CVS clerk working full-time for $55,000 a year paid more in taxes than the company that he works for. In fact, I would imagine every single person in this room paid more in taxes than CVS Health. And no one in this room has income of $6 billion annually.
That's who.
Every person is getting taken advantage of by these companies, companies like CVS Health. They take and they take and they take and they take. Who pays for the roads that brings products to their stores? People of Minnesota. Who pays for the education for the workers that work in that business? The state of Minnesota. Who pays for the regulations around the doctors and the pharmacists that help customers trust the product? People of Minnesota. Who pays for the research that discovers the drugs they sell? The people. Who pays for the police that are called when people shoplift from the store? The people. Who pays for the firefighters if there's a fire or someone needs medical care? The people. Who pays for maintaining the utilities that go to those stores? The people. And with all that generosity from the people, the company pays nothing back to society, pays very little to the average worker, and endow huge fortunes on their executives. This is wrong. The bill before you today is starting to address that issue. As I call it, the tax excessive CEO pay bill would increase tax rates on publicly held companies subject to the corporate franchise tax in Minnesota who pay their CEOs a significantly disproportionate amount as compared to their workers. The tax penalty would equal corporate franchise tax rates of 9.8% plus an additional percentage for companies reporting a pay ratio of at least 50 to 1, and then it scales from there. The database already exists. It's publicly reported because of the Dodd-Frank Act in 2010 federally. That requires publicly traded companies to report that CEO to median worker pay ratio. It's a publicly known information. Companies already report it. This bill would not add any more reporting burden for companies and very little to the DOR for publicly accessed information. This bill would also ban companies who are charged this surtax, so confirming that they are paying exorbitantly a lot to their CEOs, from receiving grants from the state of Minnesota, because if companies have the money to give their CEOs huge compensation, they don't need public subsidies. Quite simply, the people of Minnesota shouldn't be supplementing Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos' bank account. Thank you, Chair. I do have testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Moving now to testimony. First up is Alec Williams and Dalton Danielson. You're on deck. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Williams, please go ahead when you get up there. Introduce yourself as you get started.
Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, members of the committee, my name is Alec Williams, and I'm a researcher for We Make Minnesota, a coalition of labor unions and grassroots organizations advocating for a fair tax code that funds the public services that Minnesotans rely on. Thank you for the opportunity to share a perspective on House File 1041, which increases the tax rate for certain corporations with high CEO to median worker pay ratios. We support this policy because it raises needed revenue in a fair and targeted way from corporations with the greatest ability to pay. As Representative Smith pointed out, in 1965, CEOs of major companies across the country were paid about 21 times as much as the typical worker. By 2024, that ratio has grown to 281 times. Corporations that are profitable enough to pay their CEO over 500 times the wages of the median worker can reasonably contribute and a little bit higher tax rate to help fund the public systems that support their workforce and customers. Some may argue that this policy would make the state less economically competitive. However, Minnesota's sales factor apportionment system means that corporations are taxed based on the share of their sales that occur in the state. In practical terms, a corporation would only avoid this tax by reducing its sales and economic activity in Minnesota, giving up revenue in order to avoid a slight tax increase, which would not be a worthwhile trade-off. House File 1041 would raise over $212 million in the next biennium, which could be used for meaningful investments in healthcare, education, and other essential public services that benefit Minnesotans across the state. The crisis facing HCMC is a reminder that the legislature is facing growing public needs that require sustainable revenue solutions. House File 1041 is a fair and reasonable step toward ensuring that highly profitable corporations contribute to the public investments that made their success possible. We urge the committee to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Dalton Danielson, and on deck is Skylar Bull-Lyon. Welcome back. Please proceed with your testimony.
Of course. Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Dalton Danielson, Fiscal Policy Director with the Minnesota Business Partnership. Our members are CEOs and senior executives of Minnesota's largest employers, representing nearly one in six private sector jobs across our state. I'm here today in strong opposition to House File 1041. This bill would impose an additional corporate tax based on federal CEO to median worker pay ratios and then disqualify those same employers from state grants and incentives, regardless of their investment here, regardless of their wage levels here, or the quality of jobs they provide here in Minnesota. From an employer perspective, there are three major concerns. First, this policy penalizes corporate structure, not economic behavior in Minnesota. Many companies employ large numbers of entry-level, seasonal, or part-time workers nationwide. That federal ratio does not reflect wages, benefits, or working conditions solely in Minnesota. Yet House File 1041 would treat these companies as bad actors under state law. Second, by disconnecting eligibility for state grants from job creation or investment outcomes, the bill would discourage companies from expanding, locating, or reinvesting here. Minnesota already competes nationally for capital. Adding a new, unpredictable tax and penalty structure makes that harder, not easier. Third, House File 1041 sets a troubling precedent by using the tax code to enforce compensation policy rather than focusing on growth, workforce development, and shared prosperity. The result will be fewer projects, fewer jobs, and fewer opportunities across Minnesota. Finally, MBP members want to be partners in advancing opportunity here in Minnesota. But policies that single out large employers and tie incentives to federal metrics will push investment elsewhere. For these reasons, we respectfully urge the committee to oppose House File 1041. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, Skylar Bull-Lyon, and on deck is Brian Cook. Maybe Skylar Bull-Lyon isn't here. Oh, sorry.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Skylar Bull-Lyon, and I'm a security officer at the Minneapolis Institute of Art and a member of SEIU Local 26. Every day, I take pride in helping visitors feel safe and welcome. I believe the people who keep our buildings, airports, and public spaces running are part of what makes Minnesota strong. But right now, too many workers like me and my coworkers feel like the economy is working against us and making life unaffordable, while the ultra-wealthy continue to bring in record profits off of our labor. I am doing my part in working hard, paying my taxes, and helping this state run. It shouldn't be controversial to say that my and my fellow Minnesotans' tax dollars should serve the public good, not reward extreme corporate greed. When the gap between CEOs and workers grows wider every year and the worsening quality of life for the average citizen, people start to feel like the system is rigged against them. This legislation matters because it draws a clear line between whose side we're on. Minnesotans believe in hard work, responsibility, and looking out for each other. This legislation sends a simple, powerful message. If companies want to benefit from public dollars, they should reflect the values of the public. It says our state is willing to stand up for workers and draw a line when corporate greed goes too far. At a time when people are asking whether our government will stand up for everyday workers or the wealthiest corporations, this bill is a chance to clearly say, enough is enough. Minnesota can lead with fairness, responsibility, and respect for the people who keep our communities safe, welcoming, and strong. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and thank you for your work. Brian Cook is heading up, and on deck is Melissa Heising. Welcome back to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thanks, Chair Gomez. Members of the Taxes Committee, my name is Brian Cook. I'm the Director of Tax, Fiscal Policy, and Elections for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Chamber is a statewide organization representing more than 6,300 businesses of all sizes who employ more than 500,000 employees. We support policies that best position our state for future success by advancing a competitive business climate to encourage a growing economy. This morning, I'd like to share our thoughts on Representative Smith's House File 1041. Minnesota's high tax rates are a competitive issue for businesses and undermine investment in this state. As you know, Minnesota has long been recognized as a state with a high corporate income tax rate, currently at 9.8%, which is the second highest in the nation. While tax policy is just one factor businesses consider when deciding where to grow and invest, it does play a significant role in shaping Minnesota's economic competitiveness. As I stated earlier, in recent years, 26 other states have taken steps to lower their income and corporate tax rates to encourage economic growth and attract new businesses. Unfortunately, this means Minnesota risks becoming less competitive by leaving our tax climate as it is, let alone making it even less favorable. So House File 1041 would provide a trigger in which Minnesota's already high rate could increase by up to an additional 1.5%, bring it to a maximum of 11.3%, which is barely below New Jersey's highest in the nation rate of 11.5%. Setting tax rates by pay ratios would make Minnesota an outlier in the country, as no other state uses such a mechanism. It's also important to consider how corporate tax increases impact Minnesotans just beyond the businesses. According to the Department of Revenue's Tax Incidence Study, the corporate franchise tax burden is ultimately passed on to consumers in the form of higher prices for goods and services, to workers in the form of lower wages, and to investors through reduced returns. Tax increases don't just affect companies. They have a ripple effect across the entire economy. I do also want to point out the tax incidence study also does make the point that businesses pay a lot of property tax. They pay a lot of sales tax. Corporate franchise tax is a little bit lower on the list compared to some of the other taxes that they pay. For these reasons, we're concerned that House File 1041 would make Minnesota increasingly an outlier at a time where we could be focused on strengthening our economic competitiveness. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cook, for your testimony. Finally, Melissa Heising, welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself as you're getting started.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Heising, and I'm Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the state's labor federation representing over 300,000 working people across Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1041. House File 1041 takes a fair and straightforward approach to raising revenue. It asks corporations with extreme CEO worker-to-pay ratios to pay slightly more in taxes, and it ensures that companies that are driving income inequality are not benefiting from state grants. According to the AFL-CIO's Executive PayWatch report, in 2024, CEO pay at S&P 500 companies increased 7% from the previous year to an average of $18.9 million in total compensation. The average CEO-to-worker pay ratio was 285-1, for these companies nationally in 2024. That means the median employee would have had to start working in the year 1740 to earn what the average CEO received in 2024. Think about that for a moment. An average worker would need to work centuries to earn what a CEO makes in a single year. And in Minnesota, the CEO to worker ratio is even more extreme at 330-1. I'd ask committee members to consider, do your constituents think CEOs are hundreds of times more valuable than the average worker? How much is enough? tax cuts at the federal level are making things worse. Under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, the average CEO of an S&P 500 company will enjoy a tax cut of $489,000. That's 630 wow. times more than the median U.S. worker's tax cut. How much is enough? These tax cuts are paid for by cutting health care and food assistance for millions of people. Working Minnesotans feel the effects of the K-shaped economy every day. When wages lag behind rising costs, when corporate profits soar but paychecks don't, and when public resources are stretched thin while highly profitable corporations squeeze workers and further enrich their CEOs. House File 1041 creates a graduated tax tied to CEO to worker pay ratios. The higher the ratio, the higher the tax rate. This simply recognizes that companies choosing to concentrate wealth at the top contribute more to the public good. This bill is about making Minnesota's tax code promotes shared prosperity. Thank you to Representative Smith for authoring this bill, and we urge your support for House File 1041. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. That concludes the pre-filed testifiers. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify? Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself as you get started with your testimony.
I'm Nathaniel M. Olson, the disability advocate for the state of Minnesota. Here we go again. Taxing the rich. You know, this might actually be my last speech in this state because people can laugh about it. It's not funny. Got a 60-day termination notice because I spoke the truth. $9 billion of our fraud has been overseas. And we have a bill today that is taxing, we want to tax the rich. We should be actually discussing how we can help the Minnesota people, not blaming it on the federal government and taxing the rich. It's not going to do anything. What has the rich done to the state of Minnesota? Governor Walz gave his state of the address, taking credit that we're solving the fraud. We're not solving the fraud.
I'm sorry, could you just keep your voice down a little bit?
We're not solving the fraud if people are going homeless. We had our own Minnesota citizen go homeless. And let me tell you this, House of Representatives, when my 60 days is up, I would rather go homeless instead of sit in another ICS home full of corruption. So maybe we can think about the people like myself that are telling the stories that is going on. It's sad to see what is happening to our state. And I know I spoke on the impeachment trial. Nobody didn't want to listen to that because some of the people called it stupid. Well, I'm sorry. People are suffering. And this really breaks my heart. So I hope you all really just think that there are citizens like myself trying to fight. And we could have 1,200 foster people that could go homeless if we do not figure this thing out. So thank you. And I would like to thank the people, Madam Representative, Chairman Robbins and Patty Anderson to let me speak at your guys' committee. And this is a very emotional day for me because I have fought and fought to make sure that all voices are heard in the state of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on House File 1041 as amended? Not seeing any, we will go to member discussion. Representative Joy.
Just a real quick follow-up. Madam Chair, just to set the record too, a CVS truck has filled up in Minnesota. So when they fill up, they pay road tax. So they have paid road tax in Minnesota for roads and bridges. Just wanted to set that straight because I know the customers that actually stop.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Is there any further discussion? Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if I want to thank Representative Smith for bringing this forward. I think this is a good bill. This is a common sense bill. I think most Minnesotans would agree with this. There certainly was a time when people would look, you know, when you made 21 times the amount and people would look to this and say, that's the American dream. Maybe one day I can be a CEO. At this point, when we're looking at hundreds and thousands of times more than what an average worker makes, nobody's looking at that and saying, like, maybe that'll be me one day. It's very clear that that's not going to be us, right? Like, we know the likelihood of that is very, very, very slim. I have a question about if there is would you consider increasing the amount for corporations that are effectively monopolies like utilities? Because they are some of the highest paid CEOs in the state of Minnesota, and we have no choice but to go with the utility that actually serves us.
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Hollins. Yeah, I mean, this bill is very specific on the Dodd-Frank reporting structure, but I think you bring up a great point. I mentioned earlier CVS did not pay any federal income tax. Xcel Energy also did not pay any federal income tax last year, so I do think that's something that we should look at.
Representative Hollins.
And just to note, they did not pay any federal income tax, and they also just increased their CEO pay by 45%.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Is there any further discussion to House File 1041 as amended? Not seeing any. Representative Smith.
All right. I had so many other things to say, so I guess I'll just say it here in the closing. I want to address some of the objections, because they're objections that we hear all the time when we talk about anything that would rein in corporate greed. The first one is that this will somehow force businesses outside of Minnesota because they won't be able to be competitive anymore. It was an argument made by the chamber and some of the other folks who spoke here. So I just want to be clear about what is being said there with clear examples. Walmart is a company with a global income of $483 billion. Pays its CEO, Doug McMillon, over $29 million in compensation. They are going to see this 1.5% increase in corporate tax because of their exorbitant CEO pay. And they're going to forego the other 88.7% of its Minnesota income, close all of its shops, and leave the state? No, that's ridiculous. Of course that is not going to happen when we pass these sort of bills. And by the way, that's not a hypothetical. Thankfully, the chamber mentioned New Jersey is going to have a higher level of corporate tax rate, even if my bill were to pass in this year's tax bill. And I checked last night, there's Walmarts in New Jersey, 70 of them, that are still operating, and Walmart is still finding it profitable to be in that area. I don't think the most profitable companies in the world will forego all of the Minnesota revenue because they have to contribute to our state just a little more. And by the way, I do want to keep the working class front and center always as we're talking about these bills. The median worker at Walmart makes $29,469 a year, which is very close to the poverty line. And Walmart almost always leads or comes in second in companies with the most employees that use SNAP or have their employees on Medicaid. Their CEO to median pay ratio is 930-1. There's a question of this is going to be passed down to consumers. This is just going to make costs rise even more. I want to read specifically something from the COST letter that you have in your packets. COST is it's a think tank that is helped by and financed by the richest companies in the world. They say, the imposition of a CEO to median wage ratio tax will almost certainly have no influence on pay disparity. Like all taxes, a pay ratio tax will be borne in some combination by workers, by consumers, and by businesses. First of all, just the math on this does not work. The level of scale that these businesses are at doesn't mean that they are going to pay down these costs to consumers. I mean, think of the ridiculousness. Like, is a McDonald's that is bought in Stillwater going to be 0.00046% more expensive than a Big Mac bought in Hudson, Wisconsin? No, that's not how these companies operate. But even more than that, I want to say and point out the incredible greed that this quote shows. A CEO can make 49 times their median employee and not pay a single cent more in taxes under this legislation. They are in control of both of those numbers, what the median pay is and what their CEO compensation is. They could easily get out of this or lower their tax liability under this bill by, I don't know, lowering the compensation of their CEO, taking that money and paying their workers more, which will change the ratio and make it better. But no, they can't do that. The only things these CEOs can do with this added cost is to raise prices, to lower the wages of the workers that are already very, very low, or pass them on in some other way. To quote the Apostle Paul, the love of money is the root of all evil. Finishing up, I want to talk about why this bill is not going to pass this year, because almost certainly this bill will not pass. And it's because Republicans on this committee and in the House of Representatives almost surely won't vote for it. Why won't they vote for it? It is because the corporate elite have told them not to vote on it. And I don't even have to speculate, members. Again, this cost letter, which you can find in your packets.
Madam Chair, can I object?
Yeah.
No. I want to object.
No. Representative Roach, you do not have the floor. You have not been recognized by the chair. He's giving his closing comments on a bill. You had an opportunity to participate in discussion on the bill. You've not been recognized by the chair. You will not interrupt the proceedings of my committee.
Madam Chair, may I speak?
We're on closing comments.
Okay. Madam
Representative
Chair,
Roach.
He's implying that all Republicans are
Representative Roach, you do not have the floor right now.
Madam Speaker, Madam Chair. He's suggesting that my vote is because of some elitist.
Representative Roach, please. We're going to let Representative Smith conclude his comments.
Then, Madam Chair.
Your objection has been noted, Representative Roach. Yes, Representative Smith, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. As I was saying, the objections that I have heard to this bill, you can find in this letter by COST, which again is a think tank that is funded by the richest companies in the entire world. I don't have to speculate why this bill will be killed. It's because these companies are telling lawmakers not to vote for it. I'm not imputing motives. I'm saying what is in your packets as lawmakers right now speaking against this bill from the richest companies in the world. But COST has nicely put on the side of this letter all of the companies that their officers and their directors represent. I just want to go through a couple of these, so you recognize where these.
I'm sorry, Representative Smith. We're like at the conclusion of committee. We got to wrap it up.
Great. I will. If you want, I can tell you every single one of these companies would fall into this tax because they pay their CEO much more than they pay their median workers, including Coca-Cola, which is 1,739 to 1. Stop listening to the greedy corporations that are destroying our economy and burdening our workers with higher prices and low wages, and start listening to your constituents. The people of Minnesota deserve the chance to enjoy the wealth that they create through their labor. They don't want the crumbs that fall from the CEO table for the meal that they made. Have the courage. Let's stand up to big business on behalf of Minnesotans.
With that, Representative Smith renews his motion that House File 1041 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2026 tax bill, and it is laid over. Chair Davids, next meeting is tomorrow, Thursday, April 30th, 2026. Chair Davids.
And I'm so excited. It's going to be a great meeting. Please look on the back of your agendas. That's our agenda for tomorrow. All bills that will bring us closer to an agreement. But we also have to add a minerals article. And Madam Chair, I thank you for correcting me on the LGA CPA. You are correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excellent note to end on. There being no further business before this committee, we are adjourned.